Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to Your Health Today. We're here at the University of Maryland Medical Systems Center for Advanced Fetal Care. It's a world-class clinical and research facility dedicated to the care of the unborn child and the baby's family. The center has rapidly gained a reputation as the premier source in the region for state-of-the-art care, and one of the few on the globe with this kind of advanced technology and number of physicians and nurses dedicated to the unborn child and their family. By testing and identifying fetal abnormalities as early as possible, the center gives the baby the best opportunity for treatment and proper care after birth. We're about to talk with Dr. Christopher Harmon. Chris Harmon is the chief at the University of Maryland Hospital Center for Advanced Fetal Care. So what's the interplay between a place like this and a woman's obstetrician gynecologist who she sees, who's going to deliver the baby, who she's been seeing? I mean,
and then they would get a few tests. So, right. In fact, we're the little seed that grew into a tree, sort of in that bracket of tests. First of all, the people here are not what you would expect. We all have an obstetric orientation. Some of our nurses come from the intensive care nursery, they're called the NICU. Some of them come from labor and delivery. Some of them come from the high-risk antepartum, before delivery units. So there's a big body of expertise about what we call perinatal nursing. Our ultrasound, not technicians, our ultrasound providers, sonographers, know more about fetal physiology than any medical student and more than most physicians. And so there's a very active process of information gathering done by the sonographer as she scans the baby. So there's a lot of questions, a lot of discussion, a lot of education of the family by the sonographers. So these aren't sort of the sort of typical hold your breath or lie quietly or the doctor will explain this later. This is sort of A to Z about how's the pregnancy going so far. The physicians are all obstetricians with somewhere between 3 and 5 years of further training. So they've done 4, in some case 5 years of medical school, an internship, 4 or even 5 years of residency in OBGYN, and 3 more years of fellowship in maternal fetal medicine, and then often even more extra training in high specificity ultrasound in units like ours. They'll come and spend 6 to 12 months here learning all these really once considered exotic, now fundamental ultrasound techniques. So with all that obstetric sort of philosophy, it's not difficult to see this as a huge resource for people. This isn't a testing place. This is a place where issues about pregnancy get sorted out. In some cases, we take over the management. That's if it's really complicated or just so weird that nobody else knows about it. And so it's good to have a few old people hanging around who have seen, you know, one of those in 25 years. So that includes abnormalities, problems where the mother has a bad reaction against pregnancy and tries to hurt the, not intentionally, but her system produces something that tries to hurt the fetus. Things where invasive testing are required. Remember that the role of invasive testing has dwindled so much that what used to be commonplace training for just everyday OBs is now not even very common for those people at the very end of all this specialized training. So things like fetal blood sampling, which there were years when we did that 250 or 300 times. Now we do it 30 or 40 times, and ours is one of the units that does that around the country. So one of our sort of missions is to make sure that women understand that the first trimester is not just a mystery black hole, that there's lots of information that can be found very early, and that their obstetricians understand that we don't need to threaten the pregnancy with invasive testing most of the time. High 90s, 95, 96% of the time, we can be certain that everything is fine.
So what we're saying here is that every woman who's pregnant, expecting, should come through this first trimester of testing to make sure the baby's sound. And the majority of women and their children will be fine. And then the next two trimesters who are having serious problems or issues, that's where this place kicks in and does most of its work.
That's right.
For more information about UMMS's Center for Advanced Fetal Care, please call 410-328-3865 or log on to www.marylandfetalcare.com. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner.
Good afternoon. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And we have some interesting conversations today. We've had on our program a number of times over the last several years Joshua Kors, who's an investigative reporter and does a great deal of work for The Nation magazine, has been covering this question of soldiers who are diagnosed with personality disorders and despite their wounds and despite having spent time in combat and what happens to them in the being discharged from the Army and what they have to go through and what they've been going through. 22,000 men and women have been diagnosed with this personality disorder, which says that you have a disorder before you entered the Army or the Navy or the Marines or the Air Force or the Coast Guard.
And therefore, you are not entitled to any of those benefits,
Some of the long-term benefits.
That other veterans get because they're diagnosing that you had this personality disorder before you entered service.
And as many of the men that we've interviewed over time, these are soldiers who have been wounded in combat, who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. We'll get more details of all that with our guests. We're joined once again by Joshua Kors, who's author of the article in The Nation magazine, the cover story, Disposable Soldiers, in this week's issue of Nation magazine. Joshua, always great to hear from you, and welcome back.
Mark, good to be with you.
Always. And the man he wrote about in that article, among others, but who's the mainstay of this article, is Chuck Luther, former Army sergeant. And he's a founder and executive director of Disposable Warriors, a soldiers' advocacy group, and he received a personality disorder charge. And Chuck, welcome to the show. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And we're also joined by Ethan McCord, who joined us the other week when we talked about the WikiLeaks piece that was released, because he was in that unit, and he was one of the men who served. He served in the Navy from 2002 to 2005, then transferred to the United States Army, serving 8 years in our armed services. And he is a combat veteran from Bravo Company 216, served from April to November 2000 when he was sent back because of injuries resulting from an IED attack. But he also received a personality disorder charge. And Ethan, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And the number here is 410-319-8888 to join in on this conversation. I want to read the statement that was sent to us by the DOD, the Department of Defense, from the press office there. But before I do, Joshua, if you would describe to us the controversy around personality disorders in brief, and then I'll read everyone the statement from the Department of Defense.
Absolutely. Well, the military has been using the personality disorder discharge to take wounded soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan and slide them out the side door with this pre-existing condition. Now, Mark, personality disorder is an actual mental illness that emerges during childhood, but that's completely unrelated to what we're actually seeing. In the 3 years I've been investigating the stories, well, we're looking at soldiers like Sergeant Chuck Luther, who was wounded by mortar fire. After the blow to his head, they said that his blindness was caused by personality disorder. Last time we were here, Mark, you and I spoke about Specialist John Town,
right,
who was wounded by a rocket while serving in Iraq, got the Purple Heart. They said that his deafness after the explosion was caused by personality disorder. Case after case, we're looking at physical wounds, broken bones, smashed pelvises. Even in one case I looked at, a soldier coming back with profuse vaginal bleeding, all being blamed on this pre-existing mental illness.
Number here is 410-319-8888. Let me read to you the statement from the Department of Defense, and then we'll jump into this conversation. I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. A lot of veterans listen to this show, a lot of men and women who have served in wars from Vietnam onward, and maybe even before that, Korea and in World War II, but a lot of Vietnam vets and people from the first Gulf War, and we had a very inspiring and challenging call from a man who was with the 2nd Marines who was blown up in Lebanon. A thing that we forget when he heard this story. So please join us with your thoughts as you hear this conversation unfold. 410-319-8888. The Defense Department, we asked them to come on the show. They said, "We don't have anyone for you today, but still wanted to provide some information for your show. In 2008, the department instituted a more rigorous personality disorder, PD, discharge process with increased and high-level medical oversight. Additionally, the department conducts periodic assessments of the results of the policy, which are monitored by the department's medical and personnel council. The revised policy authorizes a PD separation only if it is diagnosed by a psychiatrist or PhD-level psychologist. Additionally, service members who have served or are currently serving in imminent danger pay, IDP, area must have their PD diagnosis corroborated by a peer or higher level mental health professional and endorsed by the Surgeon General of the military department concerned. The policy requires the post-traumatic stress disorder or other mental illness comorbidity be ruled out prior to discharge. The initial indications are that the increased awareness of more rigorous personality disorder separations policy is having the desired impact. There's been a decline in the number of personality disorder separations, which in turn have given the department greater confidence that members with signs of PTSD or TBI are being more consistently referred to the physical disability evaluation system. Moreover, they are appropriately separated with compensation for their conditions. Longstanding DOD policy requires that the secretaries of the military departments encourage all separating service members who believe their discharges were incorrectly characterized or processed to request adjudication through their respective military department's discharge review board and board for correction of military records. All the best. Eileen Lanez, L-A-I-N-E-Z, Defense Press Office of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs. And we received that at 4:16 this afternoon. So, gentlemen, I'd like to get to Chuck Luther and Ethan McCord. Let's start with Chuck and then go to Ethan. Your response when you hear that response by the DOD. Chuck?
Well, I know exactly the regulation that they're speaking about. It was 28 August of 2008 was when that came down. And, you know, that's great in theory whenever you think about it. It makes people feel warm and fuzzy that, okay, we've fixed it. They admit it that there was a problem prior or they wouldn't rewrote the regulation. Two problems with that. One is there's no verbiage in there to say, okay, we messed up and these guys could have slipped through the cracks with the PTSD, TBI, but discharged with a personality disorder like myself and Ethan and other soldiers. But there's no verbiage in there to remedy what happened to us. We're still sitting here. I am myself. When I look at my 214 with a personality disorder discharge with a huge stigma, and it infuriates me every time I see it, and it frustrates me that I gave up my life and my family's time away from me for my country to be treated like that. The second part of it is, as part of the statement that DOD gave your show was, they are correct. PD discharges are on the decline. However, we told them that it wasn't just enough to write that in there. They've left out all of us other guys. But even more so after that is you have to see that the misconduct discharges of the Chapter 14-12 Bravo and Charlie have increased almost 200% simply because they've switched them from PD discharges, because the second fastest way to administratively separate a soldier from the armed forces is a misconduct discharge. So now we don't even give them the false label. We just don't give them a label at all until they self-medicate and they self-destruct. And they medicate with alcohol, substance abuse, and other things. They end up in homicidal or suicidal situations. And then we discharge them for patterns of misconduct. And again, we are still, in essence, throwing our soldiers away.
Ethan McCord, what are your thoughts as you heard what I read from DOD?
I agree with Sergeant Luther there. As far as soldiers being thrown away, I've watched too many of the soldiers who came back with me because of the stigma of going to mental health and whatnot, self-medicating with alcohol or drugs, and then becoming a bad conduct discharge because of that. As with myself and many other soldiers, You have soldiers who have served and gave a large portion of their life for that, myself 8 years. If I had a personality disorder, I think that that would have been found out in the initial exams that I was given in coming into the military, not after I come home from Iraq.
Joshua, I bring you back here, and I'd like to hear your reaction as well, given all the research you've been doing into this and with the response we read from DOD.
Absolutely. Well, I think the first thing is for the listeners to understand what's at stake here. With a personality disorder discharge, because it's a pre-existing condition, soldiers who are wounded in combat are denied disability pay for the rest of their life. They're denied long-term medical care for the rest of their life. And they also have to give back a slice of their signing bonus because they're too wounded to complete their contract. That means these soldiers come back wounded, and just before they're let out the door, they're told, here's a bill for several thousand dollars. That's what happened to Sergeant Luther. He was given a bill for $1,500 and said, if you don't pay it, we're not only going to ask you and request the money from your... we're going to charge interest on top of that payment. It's a large burden for these wounded soldiers to bear when they come back. And yes, the Department of Defense is correct. In recent years, they have put up a few more barriers to fraudulent discharges. But the point is, the entire discharge itself is a fraud, and that's what needs to be laid bare here. Soldiers who have a severe mental illness are screened out of the system before they enter the military. And with the dozens and dozens of cases I've looked at, in the years I've been examining this, we have soldiers who are examined before they enter the military, examined before they go to combat. It's only once they're wounded in combat that this pre-existing condition is discovered.
410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation. Anthony?
This is Anthony McCarthy. I have two questions. I want to begin with Chuck and Ethan, with Sergeant Luther. The statement from the Department of Defense talked about adjudication, and I think our listeners would be very interested in knowing if you went through any kind of adjudication process to have your cases reviewed. And we'll start with you, Chuck.
Actually, yes, sir, I have. My case has been 24 months as of this month. Into that process. As of November 9th of 2009 was the first correspondence I received from the OMPF, the Military Board of Corrections, and they said, we received your case, however, it can take up to a year for a decision. In my case, in one of the cases that I work, that I took on as disposable warriors for an identical case of myself out of Fort Bragg, we submit them at the same time. That sergeant got his back as denied that it was upheld, and so actually, yes, I have been pursuing that avenue, but we're 24 months in with still no end in sight.
And Ethan McCord?
No, mine hasn't been. I got released in June 2009, and I haven't known how to do anything about that. I've just been pretty much stuck in limbo here. I am disabled because of my injuries. So I've been trying to live off of disability with my children, with no health care or anything. And it's a struggle ever since I've gotten out and taking care of my family. It affected my marriage. I'm now divorced, and there's not much you can do about it. The thing that gets me is the Army did label me as having severe chronic PTSD. They gave me that while I was in the Army, but the Army then chose also to ignore the fact that I had severe chronic PTSD as well as TBI, as well as my spine injury, and still discharged me on this other personality disorder.
We want to encourage our listeners to call the Mark Steiner Show at 410-319-8888. Join in this conversation. Joshua Kors, I have to ask you, this story was so compelling as I read it and read over it again. I am very curious. At the beginning of the story, you talk about the fact that the president, when he was a senator, expressed great concern about PD discharges and, in fact, introduced legislation to halt them. We read, obviously, the statement from the Department of Defense currently, but what are you hearing about what this administration plans to do? Does the president still have these grave concerns that he had when he was a United States senator?
That's what they've said recently, that they are still concerned. And it's important to mention that because listeners need to know the history of how those recent safeguards came about. President Obama, as a senator, was extremely concerned when he looked at these 22,600 soldiers who were being slid out the side door without benefits and the billions of dollars in disability and medical care that the Pentagon was saving by discharging these soldiers through this sideways mechanism. He put forward a bill, along with Senator Kit Bond, Republican of Missouri, to halt personality disorder discharges. And that made him a hero to a lot of veterans groups, but he became somewhat of a disappointment when he never mentioned that bill during his run for the presidency, mm-hmm. and never mentioned it now that he's taken control of the White House. And so the result of that was that a lot of people on Capitol Hill didn't understand what was going on. A lot of senators thought that halting those discharges might open the floodgates to benefits for soldiers. And so Obama and Bond had to weaken that bill into an amendment part of a spending bill which was signed by President Bush. And all it required was for the Pentagon to do a study of personality disorder discharges. 5 months later, that study landed on Obama's desk, and it's probably not going to be a surprise to your listeners to hear that the Pentagon concluded that not a single soldier had been wrongly diagnosed, and not a single soldier had been wrongly discharged. So they did put forward some changes as a suggestion to make the system even better. And that was the safeguards that you mentioned before, that a superior officer would have to approve the discharge, that a doctor would have to be there to apply the diagnosis. But Senator Bond was quite blunt about the difference these new changes have made. He said from the cases he's seeing now, the difference is somewhere between zero and less.
To the phones, 410-319-8888. We talk with Joshua Kors. You just heard his voice, investigative reporter for The Nation magazine. His latest article, a cover story for them this week, is Disposable Soldiers, as he continues to look at soldiers being discharged from the Army with personality disorders, which limits their benefits. Many of them have to pay the Army back for the initial fee they were given for joining the service, which is often more than their last paycheck. And two of those soldiers with us, Chuck Luther, who is featured in the article, former Army Sergeant and founder of the group called Disposable Warriors. And we're also joined by Ethan McCord, who joined us the other week when we talked about the WikiLeaks story, because he served in that unit, but was also one of those soldiers who wounded in combat, as was Chuck Luther, who have given personality disorders which affect their lives, their benefits, and their future. 410-319-8888. And we're talking about at least 22,600 men and women who have served the United States. 410-319-8888. Leslie in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Leslie.
Man, that's shocking, actually, that they would treat them young guys like that after they go off and make all those sacrifices. But, you know, now we see why when the powers that be have been asked, would you consider reinstituting the draft? And they so strongly say no, it will absolutely not be no draft instituted. Because for the most part, these young boys, they go off and do this, and for all intents and purposes, they one step above being just simple subcontractors. And, you know, when you tell a subcontractor, you make a subcontractor all the promises in the world just to get him to come and do the work. And then after he do the work and it's time for you to represent everything that you promised as far as the money that he's going to make and all that other stuff, then the contractor, the prime contractor, can always find a way not to pay you. See, but when they drafted those young boys and they made them come and go to Vietnam and stuff like that, see, they put themselves in a different position because now they saying to these young boys, look, you know, you're going over here and you're going to fight this war. I don't care what you say. So when these young boys come on, they was they had to do this because they couldn't turn around and say, okay, well, you on your own now. See, because it would have definitely been a public outcry. But see, now since y'all these young boys is going down there and volunteering,
right?
You know what I mean? So now they say, oh, you know, you get what you ask for. War was war. And see, and then they could diss them the way they do, man. And it's a shame, man, the way that the powers that be exercise on our young people. And, you know, and it seemed, we seem powerless, you know, to do anything about it. When in reality, man, all we got to do, man, is just, you know, stand up. It's just ridiculous that they trick them young boys like that. And, you know, and
listen, I think you make a very strong point.
Very
and I
point.
Think that, though, I would say, as somebody who lived through that Vietnam period, when a lot of guys came back, they faced a lot of horror from the Veterans Administration and the Department of the Army especially. And it took a lot of fighting to even get post-traumatic stress disorder accepted. And even though now it's accepted, we seem to be shoving it to the side. And you raised some good issues. And one of the issues, let me probe you all for a minute, that Leslie raised, there's a lot of people who think that the reason so many men and women are being said to have personality disorders, that means that they had them before they went into the service, is to save the billions of dollars in treatment that the government would have to pay if they were honorably discharged and sent home with post-traumatic stress or whatever injury they may have had. And Joshua, that's, I mean, subtext and more than subtext in your article.
Absolutely. I think the financial component is a key part of this. Looking at figures from a Harvard study and from the Pentagon, the military is saving $12.5 billion in disability and medical care. I think there's also a PR aspect to it, too. As you know, over 5,000 soldiers have died in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. And we're looking at 85,000 wounded. Now, a lot of those wounded, those are the ones officially acknowledged. If those who were slid out the side door with personality disorder were also counted on those books, you'd see those numbers skyrocket. And then there might be a lot more public outcry to end these wars or at least limit our involvement. But, you know, to go back to the caller, I'm glad that Vietnam came up because that's an important aspect too. In the 3 years I've been reporting on this, looking at dozens and dozens of cases, those include soldiers from Vietnam who've called me, who've said this happened to me 40 years ago. I've even had soldiers who came into the VA, took my reporting in with them, and said, this is what happened to me. I want you to re-examine my case. This is not a new phenomenon.
Right. There's not. We're going to take a very short break and come back to our other two guests, Chuck Luther and Ethan McCord, to comment on this and what we do about this. I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888 as we look at the case of 22,600 men and women who served our country who are being denied the most basic benefits on return because they were said to have personality disorder before they entered the service, despite the injuries they received in Iraq and Afghanistan. 410-319-8888. We have Anthony McCarthy here, co-hosting this hour. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Division of Transplantation, where patients' lives are enhanced by a renowned transplant program known for innovation and excellence in kidney, liver, and pancreas transplants. For more information, call 1-800-492-5538. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And Anthony McCarthy.
And we are talking with Joshua Kors, who wrote the lead article in Nation magazine this month, Disposable Soldiers, and investigative reporter who's done these incredible series of reports on soldiers being dismissed from our armed services with personality disorder, which cost them a great deal of their benefits. We're joined by the man who was featured in this last article by Joshua Kors, Sergeant Chuck Luther, founder and executive director of Disposable Warriors, a soldiers' advocacy group, and received a personality disorder discharge. Ethan McCord served in the Navy from 2002 to 2005, went in the Army, and he served from April to November 2000 in combat in Iraq, and was sent home because of injuries resulting from an IED attack, and received a personality disorder discharge, and we met him on our show on the Wikipedia video. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow at gmail.com. Your thoughts on this. And, you know, Ethan and Chuck, I mean, this is, let's talk about what happens next. I mean, I know, Chuck, that you are battling to get this personality disorder discharge off your record. I mean, you're in the midst of that battle and helping other soldiers do that as well. But and you're helping tell the story about the difficulties you've encountered since you created the group Disposable Workers. That was interesting. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, you know, it was the first 90 days were living hell when I first got home because I felt ultimately betrayed. I felt lost. What I'd always wanted to do was be a soldier and serve like my grandfathers before me. It was all gone. There was nothing I could do to try to make it better. There was nothing I could do to right the wrong. So I downward spiraled. And after about 90 days, I woke up from an alcohol-induced, anger-raged life and realized that I was pushing the wife and children away from me further. They didn't know who I was. They were scared of me. I was scared of myself. And it hit me one day that what we were, the name Disposable Warriors, came about. And I said it to my wife, just Disposable Warriors. And she said, what? And I said, that's what we are. We're used up and we're thrown away. And I refuse to do this. And I talked with her and wanted to develop this organization. And it wasn't even going to be an organization. It was going to be a name of a title of a person to contact. And if we could keep one soldier and one family, one wife and one set of children from ever having to go through what we went through, that's what it was going to do, and that's what it was set out to do. But we did one a long time ago, well over 100 cases now, successfully intervening on soldiers' and spouses' behalf. And, you know, for the first year and a half, Mark, I did it because I was angry, and I wanted some retribution back for what had happened to me. And mm-hmm. then a year and a half into it, it clicked one day that this is bigger than Chuck Luther. This is bigger than anything I can imagine. With the help of Josh Kors, not only the man that wrote my story and told this story perfectly in writing, he's become a close friend. And it hit me that this is not just about me. It's just that I'm blessed to be a catalyst now to use what I went through to help people not have to go through it. And here we are now. And where do we go from here? Who knows? All I know is that as long as there's still a breath in my body, I'm going to try to take care of my case. But I don't focus on my case for my personal aspect. I have other people that are helping with that. I choose to intervene, engage. I was taught by the U.S. Army as a recon scout to engage the enemy and to overpower and to take command. And that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm back to my wits a little bit, licked my wounds and got up, and here we are to continue to fight for guys that were like me 3 years ago.
And Ethan McCord, I mean, as a veteran, 8 years, Navy and Army, and I know you haven't been, at least my assumption is from our last conversation and today, that you haven't been actively involved in battling as a veteran, but how do you feel hearing this? I mean, given your own story, the men and women you served with, what are your thoughts when you hear this story about all the other men and women who have gone through similar things?
Oh, it's absolutely sickening. Makes me sick to my stomach. I was a part of the system as far as the military, and you're taught that military is with such great honor and courage, but it doesn't seem like the military is taking very much honor and courage in themselves in helping the soldiers who went to war for this country and are just getting pushed out the door. You know, it seems so much easier, especially with the guys whose wounds aren't completely visible, as far as PTSD and TBI, to just push them out the side door. And thank you very much for your service, but you're no longer needed. It's a very sickening situation.
Do either one of you, before we turn back to Joshua Kors and open the phones here, do either one of you regret having served?
Go ahead, Ethan. I don't regret having served. It was a learning experience. It's something that I wanted to do from the time I was a small child.
Mm-hmm.
You live and learn. I served my country. albeit not in the greatest of terms in some senses, but yeah, I don't regret it at all. It's made me a stronger person, that's for sure.
Is that was Chuck, right?
No, that was Ethan.
That was Ethan. Mm-hmm. Chuck?
Absolutely, I do not regret it. You know, I proudly served regardless of what my commander said was me. For the 12 years, 7 months that I gave to the United States Army,
years.
Proudly, I believe that I gave every ounce of whatever I had in me to them. And absolutely not, because I think that it, like Ethan said, it's made me a better person, a bigger and stronger person. And, you know, we run in paths of life just to get to a certain point to help somebody else out, I think. And I think that's, I'd do it all over again the same way just to be where we're at now.
Joshua Kors, this is Anthony McCarthy. I'm curious, as we listen to Chuck and to Ethan, no regrets about their service. Is that common among the other soldiers? And one of the things I wanted to point out before you answer that, Leslie called in the previous half hour, in the previous segment, and mentioned these young men and talked about the men who had served. There's a great many women who've also served with distinction but also been discharged because of personality disorder.
Oh, absolutely. This is happening regardless of gender. And I think what makes Sergeant Luther's case so remarkable is not just that he got this discharge after being struck by mortar fire, but also how they treated him. Yeah. It wasn't just that they tried to deny him benefits. When he came into the aid station and refused to accept this diagnosis, they put him in a closet and held him there for over a month under enforced sleep deprivation, keeping the lights on all night, blasting heavy metal music at him all through the night, until finally, at the end of a month, he was willing to sign anything, and he did, went ahead, signed papers saying he had this pre-existing mental illness. They shipped him back to Fort Hood, and that's when they told him the repercussions of the PD discharge. No disability pay, no long-term medical care, and here's your bill for $1,500. And Mark, I want to go back also to, we had spoken recently about PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so important that we avoid the confusion there. PTSD, or shell shock, and personality disorder, the one thing they have in common is a few letters. And that's pretty much it. As you know, in part two of my series, I interviewed doctors who talked about the pressure on them to purposely misdiagnose. One told me the story of a soldier that came back with a chunk missing from his leg. His superiors pressured him to diagnose that as personality disorder. I think so many folks look at PTSD and it's this kind of amorphous debate. The military says, well, you think he was crazy after he went to combat? We think he was crazy beforehand. I guess we both have our own opinions. But, you know, with Chuck, when we're looking at, you know, hearing loss and vision problems, with Ethan, when we're looking at problems with his spine, you know, these are physical problems that are a result of combat, not from any problem with a personality.
Let's return to the phones here. 410-319-8888. A lot of people are calling in to join this conversation. And one that we need to have, and we need to make our fellow citizens aware of what's going on here, and maybe to force our Congress to begin to change these laws and perhaps even abolish the notion of personality disorder. Iris, you're on the air.
How are you gentlemen today?
Hi,
well, welcome.
Good. Thank you all for being here and talking about this very important subject. I'm not going to stay on long because I don't think you're supposed to curse on the radio.
No, you can't do that.
Making me very angry. But I'm issuing a challenge. I know that Pledge Week is over, but I'm issuing a challenge to everybody out there that I understand there's lots of different ways that people think that we can get the wars to stop and this kind of mistreatment to stop. But one surefire way is if they don't have soldiers to serve. And as a public school teacher, I know a lot of young men and women have the same notion that these gentlemen have or had coming into it of the glory, of the honor of serving their country, and that their country would therefore then take care of them. And if we can each find three young people who are looking for the kind of support and the kind of training and the kind of honorable service that we all would like to think of as military service and steer them in the direction of the Peace Corps or AmeriCorps or many, many, many other organizations, and also explain these kinds of exact situations and the way that recruiters lie and stuff about GI Bill funding not really being what it's supposed to be, and really just explain that it sounds a lot better than it is. We can maybe, as the brother was saying, help that one family to not have to go through that.
Well, I think...
Is this Joshua?
It is. It is. I just want to say, as a citizen, I think there are a lot of great ways that American soldiers can serve our country. But if there are those in the audience who are interested in trying to confront this issue, there are a lot stronger ways, I think, than encouraging young people not to serve through the military. And one is a Facebook page that cropped up recently in the wake of Sergeant Luther's story. It's called Stop Personality Disorder Discharges for Our Wounded Soldiers. It was started by a former National Guardsman who has been reading these stories and has been disgusted by these wounded soldiers who are being denied benefits. Mark, the movement there has been remarkable. Within an hour of the group's formation, it had 100 members. Within a day, that number had quintupled. And I checked it today before coming to the studio. It now has 1,400 members. I'm sure that's something that's only going to expand as people learn more and more about what's happening to these wounded soldiers.
I think that, and before we go to the next caller, I want to follow up with what you were saying, Joshua, because I think that it's when you have been an anti-war activist, like our caller Iris probably was and is, and have opposed the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and like many people did who fought Vietnam but came back and helped start, as many of the brothers I know started, Vietnam Veterans Against the War, VVAW. But I think it's hard sometimes, Ethan and Chuck, I want you to respond a bit to what Joshua said and also our caller, just in terms of when you hear that, what it A, makes you think and feel, and B, for you to maybe help other listeners understand why it is you entered in the first place. I won't spend too much time on this. I want to come back to PD and really kind of focus on it and let people know what we can do. But Ethan, would you like to start?
With what the caller was saying, that sounds great in a peaceful world to not have any soldiers whatsoever. But unfortunately, this isn't a peaceful world. You have to have soldiers. You have to have a military. If we were to take everybody who's willing to serve for the country and say, don't do it, then what do we become then? We become a nation with no soldiers, nobody willing to stand up and fight for the United States. You can be anti-war, as I'm anti-war, but I'm not so naive as to believe that no military power whatsoever, is a good thing, because it's not. We would just become a nation unguarded.
Chuck?
Exactly. First and foremost, I want to say that I appreciate her her outlook on that, but 100%, I love the U.S. Army. I love my Army. It's still my Army, and I love my country, and I'll tell you what, it's the decision-making by some pretty poor-managed and integrity-qualified or lack-of-qualified commanders that are making these decisions. I don't believe the Army as a whole stood up and said, hey, we need to exit 1,600 soldiers with PD this year to stay on task. I don't believe it happened the way. I think we overwhelmed ourselves with these war, just like Ethan said. We would be naive to believe that we could live in a world without a military force. I am anti-Iraq and Afghanistan war. I'm not anti-war as a whole. I believe some wars are out of necessity for human rights. But I just got to say that I think the best way, just like Josh said, there are a lot of other ways. My son is 18. He's leaving for college in 4 months. And he said, Dad, I know it's going to be expensive to send me to college. Maybe I can join the Army and, I would get the GI Bill. And I said, do you want to serve because you woke up this morning and you want it to be something big, and you want it to do something bigger than you, and you want it to, you know, contribute to your country as your grandfathers and your great-grandfathers and your father has. And he said, well, no, I was looking at school money. I said, then no, you're not going to serve. The day you feel the other way, I might not like it, but I'll support your decision.
I'm glad you two responded that way. I wanted our listeners to kind of hear it. I think it's we have a broad citizenship, and we need to hear all of our voices on this. 410-319-8888. And I just went up to Facebook and typed in Stop Personality Disorder Discharges for our wounded soldiers. And I just joined. I encourage you all to do the same, to make your voices heard. There are now 1,494 people on that website, and you can make it 1,495. 410-319-8888. Clarence, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Not to get too far away from the subject, but I think there's a common thread with this personality disorder that I would like some of the veterans to be aware of. Even if you were honorably discharged with no history of any problems within the military, and you go to the Veterans Administration hospital, and let's say, for instance, that you just express your dislike for having to wait a year and a half just to get an MRI, all of a sudden personality disorder will appear in your record, in your medical records, and the Veterans Administration will actively use this to deny you benefits or you at a later date. It's an abusive, there is a widespread abuse of this term, personality disorder, even after you are discharged or even if you have no history of problems within the military. And I think that thread goes all the way up to General Konseki. I believe his name is Konseki now.
Used to be Konseki. He's now head of Veterans Administration.
Yes,
Veterans
sir.
Affairs.
And I honestly believe that this is just a term that is easily applied to where if the military or the Veterans Administration does not want to acknowledge having to pay you a later benefit, that they use this term.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned that,
Josh,
because it is important for listeners to know that 69,000 soldiers are waiting in line right now for their cases to be handled by the VA. You know, that's time that wounded soldiers need their benefits, and they're not getting them, and their families are struggling. But the other aspect of it, you know, how you're treated when you come in and say you're wounded, I think that's a key component to it, and I think it goes to the culture of the military. One of the dirty papers that came into the spotlight in some of my recent reporting was of a group of veterans who had sued the VA for failure to treat them properly. A manual from the VA for its doctors that instructed its doctors to not trust soldiers when they came in reporting traumatic brain injury and PTSD. Because, as the manual itself said, those symptoms are very easy to fake. I think there's a sense in the culture that a lot of soldiers aren't coming in to report their shell shock because they're too macho and they don't want to admit what's going on. But I think, from my reporting, I've seen it be a completely different motivation. A lot of these soldiers are afraid of being accused of a crime, malingering, which is military terminology for faking their symptoms. If you're wounded with one of these invisible wounds like a blow to the head or a shock to your electrical system, would you risk going in to get care if you knew that that could lead to your ending up being accused of a crime of faking your symptoms? At that point, a lot of soldiers back off. They say, you know what? I'm going to deal with this myself. I don't want to end up being accused of being a criminal.
Chuck Luther, this is Anthony McCarthy again. I'm very curious about what Josh just said. As I read the story, you just called the Army your army, my army, and that it was superiors who were making these misguided decisions without integrity. But these were your fellow soldiers that actually locked you away, played this harsh metal music that deprived you of sleep. These were your fellow soldiers that took orders and actually treated you this way in your army.
Right. And I know it sounds pretty unrational to say that, because it was. These were guys that
4 or 5 days prior to the first incident, we were out in combat taking fire together, and guys were cover firing so we could move you know, on the enemy and be protected. And then now all of a sudden, and it's because when you have a lieutenant colonel, a field grade officer, tell a sergeant or a first sergeant, even my first sergeant had told me a year after we got home and he was retired from the service, he apologized profusely at a restaurant outside post. He called me up and said, hey, I'd like to meet with you for lunch. And we talked. He asked me how I was doing. And he said, I am so sorry what happened to you, because we know it was wrong. Mm. But I couldn't say anything because I had a 30-year career. And I have 3 children, which 2 of them are in college. And if I was threatened that if I stood up, then, you know, my career could be in jeopardy. And that's actually what happened. I was removed from his command when he first said something about this, something's wrong, it's not a personality disorder. They moved me to a whole different command under now Major Christopher Weary, then Captain Weary, who moved units also. He took me with him just so he could keep me underneath him to continue to put that pressure on. And none of those young soldiers, those sergeants, those specialists, those privates that were over me, they weren't going to risk their careers because they saw what a 12-year veteran, a sergeant in the Army, was getting treated. They sure didn't want a part of that.
So I just it's almost hard to kind of think what to say next when I hear these stories. It just upsets me so much. And I think that the question is now politically, where does this go? I mean, the only way it can change is if President Barack Obama decides to change it from the top, as you point out in your article, Joshua, or if there's a push again inside Congress, which happened in large part because of your stories.
Well, that's one part of it. I did notice on the Facebook page today that the head of that group is trying to start a May Day movement where those who are angry about this issue write or call the White House on May 1st. If there's a bombardment about this issue, perhaps the issue will come back up on the president's radar. I know that several people in the Senate are trying to do that as well. In November, Senator Bond gathered a few of his colleagues to write a letter to the president to basically say, hey, you were our partner on this issue when you were in the Senate. I hope you'll take this issue back up again now that you've entered the White House. And the White House replied immediately by saying it was still very concerned. But as a lot of soldiers know, concern doesn't always translate into action.
It doesn't. I do encourage people to go to Stop Personality Disorder Discharges for Our Wounded Soldiers on Facebook, and you can go to our webpage, steinershow.org, and connect to the nation and also connect to joshuacores.com and read all the stories he's been writing. They're all there, and we'll be setting up a page on our webpage with all of Joshua Kors' stories and the interviews we've done with him, along with the links to the Facebook page and everything else, so you too can be involved, because this is happening to too many people in our country who have served our country. And Joshua Kors, I just want to thank you for not letting this story go.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to get the word out to your listeners.
And that you have just stuck with this thing and pushed it, and it needs to be pushed. And Joshua Kors, we going
to
say something?
I was just going to say, and thank you to Chuck Luther and yes, Ethan McCord for not only their service to this country, but their determination to keep moving forward. And, you know, Mark and I often talk about our position on war, but I think it's undisputed that we have a great respect for men and women who would take up arms to protect the values and the beliefs and to protect fellow Americans. So I just salute both of you very, very much.
And we'd like to stay in touch with you all. And Ethan, I do appreciate you, Ethan McCord, once again, for agreeing to come back on the show. It's always a pleasure to have you on the air with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for me also.
And I want to wish you all the luck. Anything we can do, just let us know. And Chuck Luther, we'll help you advance your cause any way we can. Thank you so much for serving the country and joining us on the air. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Joshua, take care of yourself. We'll talk soon, Joshua Kors.
All right.
Good to have you all here, and please connect to our webpage so you can see what to do next. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News & World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. We'll be right back after this very brief break to talk about issues in the news today. Stay with us.